This evening, we're discussing the death of Dr. Mary Sherman and how it connects to the CIA and the cancer industry. This is the hottest cold case in America, the 1964 murder of a nationally known cancer researcher. It sets the stage for the gripping expose of medical professionals enmeshed in covert government operations over the course of three decades. Dr. Mary's Monkey, that's the name of the book. How the unsolved murder of a doctor, a secret laboratory in New Orleans, and cancer-causing monkey viruses are linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, the JFK assassination, and emerging global epidemics. So, Ed Haslam, our guest this evening. Ed, I mean, there's so much speculation about who Lee Harvey Oswald was, what he did. Was he a patsy? Was he a government official? Was he, you know, a communist? Where did he play in on this? And it's so hard because he's a slippery eel, man. There's, you know, one day he's out decrying communism, the next he's out in support of it. And you know, it just seems that there's no one answer for who Lee Harvey Oswald is. How are we attaching him to the story? And to was he just, again, a patsy in this story? He just happened to be the most unlucky man in the world who kept getting involved in all of these scenarios? Or was he well aware of how each one of these wheels were turning?
Oh, he was very aware. He knew he was being set up, and he couldn't leave because these guys play really rough, and he was afraid they'd kill his family if he did. Okay, but I want to, right before the break, you asked an awfully good question of... Were there investors who put up this money instead of the CIA directly? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I want to answer that because the implication is it's either investors or the CIA. But the actuality is that's the way the CIA operates. Okay. Stansfield Turner, who was the director of the CIA a number of years ago, did some testimony to Congress where he said the CIA was behind the financing of 159 hospitals in America. And with the Hill-Burton Fund out of Congress was how they actually did it. But what the CIA did was they would provide seed money, like 10% down, like you would do if you were buying a house, through third parties. And just like Clint Murchison, the Texas billionaire, he's the guy that put up the seed money for the Ochsner Clinic. And the rest of the money, the $100 million for the Ochsner Clinic, was provided by Congress. Okay? And why was the CIA doing this with hospitals? So they could get beds back for their secret research when they needed it. Okay? This is admitted by the CIA director. And so the idea that you've got something that in today's money would be about $100 million, and you've got six people each writing a check for approximately $13, $14 million. You have to say, well, what's the connection with the CIA? You know, if anybody can be credited with founding the CIA, it's Wild Bill Donovan, who ran American intelligence during World War II. And after the war, Donovan sits on the board of directors of the American Cancer Society with Alton Ochsner. Okay? These guys are in face-to-face communication through there. So, and, you know, as I said, I have Ochsner's file. He's got a 40-year history of secret assignments for the government. So could it have been investors? Yes. Does that rule out the CIA's involvement? No, it doesn't. So now back to Oswald. The world's unluckiest man. That's an interesting phrase. The reason that Lee was running around acting like a communist was because he was told to do so by Guy Bannister. And the reason for that is they were trying to get him to be able to get into Cuba to deliver the biological weapon. And what's interesting, Lee tells Judy on July 29th that they're going, that he is figured out that these people behind Bannister are really serious about killing Kennedy, and that he is concerned, based on what they're asking him to do in August, that they're setting him up to be the patsy. Now, what are they asking him to do in August? Well, that's August 9th is when the street fight is. Then he's handing out the pro-Castro stuff in front of the International Trademark, which is the worst place in the world to hand out something like that, okay, with the TV cameras rolling, and then they put him on radio. All of this is in August, okay? Then, And all of it makes him look pink, all right, pro-communist. And then in September, he's sitting on his front porch reading a book. He does nothing like he did in August. What's he doing in September? Well, he's waiting for the patient to die. Oh, the patient. Remember Judy? Remember the mice? Remember the cancer? They're killing mice. They start killing monkeys, and then they need to test it on a human. Where do you get a human that you can kill and nobody's going to miss? Death Row, Angola Penitentiary. Okay, Angola Penitentiary is right up there about 4 hours from New Orleans, and there's a mental hospital for the criminally insane in Jackson, Louisiana, and they need to bring the patient from Angola over to the mental hospital, and they need to bring the biological weapon up there. So they plan all this for August 29th, 1963, and they have a black Cadillac owned by the International Trademark, driven by Clay Shaw, and he drives David Ferry and Lee Oswald from New Orleans, 3.5 hours north, up to Jackson. And the plan is they're waiting for the van to come over from Angola. And the van's going to have this big seal on the side, you know, prison system, all this stuff. And they're going to wait for the van. And as the van passes, they're going to get in line behind the van so they can sneak onto the grounds of this heavily guarded facility as part of the convoy. But they don't want to wait in Jackson. Jackson's a little tiny town, and a big black Cadillac in 1963 would call a lot of attention. So they go down the road a bit to Clinton, Louisiana, so they can wait in front of the courthouse in the shade of an oak tree and by the payphone and wait for the phone to ring. When the phone rings, that means the patient has left Angola. So they're going to move into position and wait for the van, and they'll follow the van back in. The only problem with this plan is they're assuming that the square in front of the courthouse is going to be empty on a hot August afternoon. And what's actually going on, this is August 29th, the day before was August 28th, and Martin Luther King gives his I Have a Dream speech in Washington, D.C. And because of that, the Congress on Racial Equality knew that speech was coming. So they have planned a black voter registration drive in this essentially Ku Klux Klan-controlled town for the next day. So what's going on in this square is there's a whole line of blacks waiting to register to vote, and on the other side of the square, the angry whites standing around with their arms crossed, and right in the middle is the town's marshal by the name of John Manchester, and he doesn't want any trouble. And into this scene drives the black Cadillac. So he says, who's this? You know, feds, media, agitators, I'm going to go find out. So he goes over to the black Cadillac and says, may I see your ID? And the guy pulls out his driver's license and says, I'm Clay Shaw from the International Trademark. And out of the back seat gets this young white guy, climbs out, and he goes and gets in line with the blacks. People are noticing this, right? And he goes up and signs his name on the register to see if they'll let him register to vote, even though he doesn't live in the area, just because he's white. Well, he signs his name in. He is Lee Harvey Oswald. So we've got one car, the town marshal identifying the driver as Clay Shaw and the passenger as Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, this was the essence of Jim Garrison's case, that he had associated Clay Shaw with Oswald. Now, how do we know all this? Because when the House Select Committee on Assassinations started their investigation in the 70s, they subpoenaed the town marshal in Clinton, Louisiana. And he went up to Washington, D.C. and gave congressional testimony about Clay Shaw and Lee Oswald getting out of the black Cadillac. However, Congress took that information in executive session and stamped it secret, keeping it from the United States people. For them, I mean, they knew at that point in time that Garrison's essential point was correct. He was not crazy. He had associated Clay Shaw with Lee Oswald. And we didn't find out about it until after the Oliver Stone movie triggered the JFK Records Act. That was one of the records that was released. And so that's one of the ways we know that Oswald is involved in this whole project. Now, one
all right, thing- well, let's take a break again real quickly, Ed. We'll talk more about the book, more about the case, and find out about the updates that you've added to the book. What are the new bits that you're re-releasing for this book? Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast AM continues after this. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Our guest, Edward Haslam. The new edition of his book, Dr. Mary's Monkey, is out. It's newly updated with plenty of more information, new photographs, new evidence, new stories. We're talking with Ed tonight about the case. We're going to find out specifically what the new information is that he's able to share for this anniversary. Let's get back into it, Ed. Time is going to slip away from us. Phone lines will be open next hour. So if you have questions for our guest regarding the case, you can call in then. Let's get back into this. It seems like we're starting to gel this and pull it all together. Keep us moving through this timeline.
Okay. Well, last thing we talked about was August 29th when they brought the biological weapon up and injected the prisoner. And they needed to know if cancer kicked in. And it takes about 48 hours for the cancer to kick in. And there's a blood test, a very special blood test, only a few people knew how to do back in 63, that can tell if cancer has kicked in. And one of the people who's been trained to do this blood test is Judith Very Baker. And this is one of the things they taught her how to do up in Buffalo, New York, at the Roswell Park Cancer Institute. So Lee Oswald drives on 2 days later, August 31st, Lee Oswald drives Judy Baker back up to Jackson, Louisiana. She's wearing like a little nurse's outfit, and they sneak her into the mental hospital for her to do the blood test. And yes, the blood test is positive. The guy does have cancer, and she reports that. But she also says to Ochsner, she writes Ochsner a note that says, look, I didn't sign up for murder, you know? This is unethical. Well, you just don't say things like that to Alton Ochsner, okay? And he says, I told you never to write anything down. You're out of New Orleans, and you're out of medicine, and blah, blah, blah. And Ochsner's now really concerned that people like Judy are going to turn on him and expose what he's doing, okay? So remember that guy I was telling you about that I talked to that lived in the patio apartments? I talked to you about Victoria, but Victoria's husband's name, Owen. And Owen says that his name was in this police report about a burglary in Mary Sherman's apartment. And I said, well, Owen, how do you know that? And he said, I got the report. You want to see it? I said, yes. And he sends me the report. Mary Sherman's apartment was broken into on the night of August 31st, the same day, when Lee Oswald gets back in town in New Orleans. And this heavyset Cuban guy is seen close to the apartment, and they think he was part of the break and entry. And I get the police report, and I'm going to put this in today's dollars so that you get the impact of this. 70% of what was stolen, about $12,000 worth of stuff, is classified as miscellaneous. All right? I mean, a little bit of cash, some furs, some jewelry, and $12,000 of other stuff was taken out of her apartment. So I contact Judy, and I said, Judy, you were in Mary's apartment. What did she have in there that could have been worth that much money? And Judy sends me back a list of scientific equipment like oil immersion microscopes and autoclaves and certain that kind of stuff that she had seen in Mary Sherman's apartment, and it adds up to $12,500. So that document is one of the documents in there. One of the other things I put in here – a lot of information has been coming to me since 2007, and one of the things that came to me was a doctor at Ochsner Clinic said, everybody knows that Stanley Stump killed Mary Sherman. Well, I didn't know who Stanley Stump was, but I heard some rumors about him, and one of the rumors I heard was that he committed suicide a couple of months after the Mary Sherman murder, and he was seeing a psychiatrist. Well, so I go to a friend who's got a big radio show in New Orleans. In fact, they, for many years, carried Coast to Coast on it. And I said, I'd like to ask your audience some questions. I said, anybody out there know Stanley Stump? Please get a hold of the station and let me know. Well, it turns out Stanley Stump was Mary Sherman's resident. All right? He worked in the emergency room at Ochsner Clinic. And I tracked down when he died. So it's a long story. I won't go into it. But he died on December 21st, 1977. That's 13 and a half years after Mary Sherman. And I read all the homicide reports. His name's not mentioned. So what is this rumor going on around about Mary, about Stanley Sump being involved in Mary Sherman's murder? Well, Stanley was an athlete, a big, strong guy, okay, lettered in basketball and baseball and stuff like that. And he worked in the emergency room at Ochsner Clinic. Well, when you work in an emergency room, you like work one day on, one day off, and you never show up on your day off, you know, because you got to de-stress. But Stanley shows up the night of Mary Sherman's murder, and he's dressed in his civilian clothes, okay, his casual clothes. He's not dressed for medicine. And he shows up. He doesn't talk to anybody. He goes into the back, into the storeroom in the back of the emergency room, gets something, and leaves without saying a word to anybody. Looks all kind of, people are noticing him. Like, what's up with Stanley? You know, blah, blah, blah. What do would they have in the back of an emergency room that you might need to transfer the body from the federal property back to her apartment? A body bag. And how would you get the body back there? Somebody would have to carry it. And they find, in Mary Sherman's apartment, they find a pair of small women's gloves that have blood stains on them. Well, that small woman probably didn't carry Mary's dead body up the stairs. Somebody with some strength had to. And what really gets me is, why was Stanley Stump, if this rumor is going around that Stanley Stump hated Mary Sherman and killed her, why wasn't he ever investigated or questioned by the police? And we now have the police files, and we know he was not questioned. Was somebody protecting Stanley Stump? You know, it's an unanswered question. I don't have the answer to this question, but it's one of the things, if you go to New Orleans and you start asking around, you're going to hear about Stanley Stump, and I wanted to get the background information on him. So maybe Stanley was involved in transferring her body back to her apartment. But the big point is, the real criminals here are not the people that stabbed Mary Sherman in the heart. The real criminals are the ones who blew off her arm and sabotaged the linear particle accelerator. And that's the photos of the things in the new book. The things I think are the most important are the crime scene photos, because they show exactly what happened to Mary Sherman's body. And that ain't no mattress fire.
No, definitely. I mean, the pictures are very graphic. They're very detailed. And you can definitely see this wasn't just a person being lit on fire. There was something that appears to have been a lot more focused, some kind of weapon that would have caused this kind of disturbance of the body and have left it the way it was. Very, very hard to look at. The information's in the book. You can check out the website, spell it out, drmarysmonkey.com, and you'll be able to find more information about our guest and the book and get autographed copies of the book there as well.
I also have a special for your listeners where you can get a signed copy for less than the Amazon price. It's only going to be for a couple of days, but it's on the website right now.
Fantastic. So go check that out. It's always great for Coast to Coast listeners. When we come back, we're going to try to muddle through this and get the last bit out before we open up phone lines at the top of the next hour. Try to understand how this all pulls together, how these ties, these threads, what does the polio vaccine, polio vaccine and Dr. Mary's death, why is this tied? Did that have something to do with the assassination of Kennedy? Did it have something to do with Oswald in the storyline? Does this continue today? Is an epidemic that continues now and is happening globally, is it because of what was set in motion 50 years, 60 years ago? Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast AM and more answers come right after this. Ed Haslam, he's written a book called Dr. Mary's Monkey, How the Unsolved Murder of a Doctor, a Secret Laboratory in New Orleans, and Cancer-Causing Monkey Viruses are linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, the JFK assassination, and emerging global epidemics. Let me just do a quick question here to kind of clarify the title of the book and the subtitle here. When you talk about the JFK assassination, Ed, are you just tying the fact that you were able to put Clay and Ferry and Oswald together, whereas in the past it's been said that they didn't know each other, that there was no connection to them? Is that the only connection that really puts them together that ties to the Kennedy assassination? It's not like JFK was aware of the inoculations that had gone on and the death of Mary, and his death had to happen because of all of these things and these balls in motion. Is that correct?
Well, if they had not blamed the Kennedy assassination on Lee Oswald, there wouldn't be a connection. I mean, it is Oswald that is the connection. Okay.
And okay, but the clarification I'm asking though is the murder of Dr. Mary Sherman and the polio viruses, the cancer monkey viruses that were spread. It's not like Kennedy knew about this or was about to do something that would cause his death. That's not a tie to it. It's just simply the thread between her, the work that was done, and Lee Harvey Oswald.
That's correct. I mean, okay. This is not the cause of the Kennedy assassination.
All right, great. I had a ton of those questions pouring in on my email and Facebook messages, so I just wanted to get to that and make sure that we did clarify that the only bond in that is Oswald, and that here the stories that he was not connected to these three people can actually be traced through Dr. Mary's book and through this history.
Right. That being said, I will also say that Jack Kennedy was aware that the CIA was doing things that they were unwilling to tell the White House about, and that he put his brother, Bobby, in a supervisory position over the CIA to work with the controller of the CIA to figure out about these millions of dollars that were missing from the CIA's budget. And that piece of information fits pretty nicely in with this story, okay? But I don't think that this is the only issue. I mean, I think the fact that JFK was pulling out of Vietnam and was backing off from the nuclear testing and all those other things play much more into why he was killed. But the racial issue, the whole remember that was the summer of the civil rights thing, and that was a real hot button issue, particularly in the South. And I think that played into Kennedy's death. But the big issue is that Oswald didn't kill Kennedy. And it doesn't matter to my story, frankly, because, you know, if Oswald did kill Kennedy, it makes him that much more of an interesting person in my story. But I don't think he did, because the evidence seems to be that he was on the second floor at the time. So I'll just say that and drop it there, and we can get back to talking about Dr. Mary's monkey. But
okay.
The real issue is that Oswald was part of this laboratory in David Ferry's apartment. He was, you know, if Judy needed more fetal calf serum for her experiments, Oswald was the guy that would go over to the medical supply place and get it. I mean, he was an operational support person to this. He gets Judy her apartment. He sets her up in her cover job. I mean, he is playing a role. And when Jim Garrison gets his hands on Clay Shaw and Lee Oswald, he thinks he's got his hands on the Kennedy assassination. What he's really got his hands on is the biological weapon. And he doesn't understand it. And so there's a reason for shutting Garrison down for national security that really doesn't have to do with who shot President Kennedy as much as it has to do with the biological weapon. Now, Oswald had penetrated the plot, according to Judy, right? Oswald was in contact with Judy up to the Wednesday before the assassination by telephone, and he was telling her about it. And he had penetrated the plot, but he couldn't run because he was afraid they would kill his family if he did. And these guys play rough. So that's where we are.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue with Ed Haslam right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. It's a dark, weird, twisted tale, Dr. Mary's monkey, an unsolved murder that ties to a very strange part of our history and a dark underbelly to a lot of what's gone on in the world that people aren't aware of. Ed, we've talked about the polio virus and how it was attached to this in these monkey cancer-causing agents, and how millions upon millions of people were injected with this, and that there has been an eruption of cancer since then. You know, as I said, maybe that was the catalyst, maybe those shots, and then adding everything that we've done to ourselves into our food and artificial everything that we eat and drink and, you know, put ourselves around just makes us more prone to cancer, you know, as we kind of covered in the first hour. I'm just curious, with all of this going on, is there an end? Is this continuing to go? Is bad medicine from that same findings back in the 40s and 50s and 60s still affecting us today? And I also back that question with the fact that isn't that kind of a problem in all forms of medicine? I mean, at one point we were putting an ice pick up somebody's nostril and chipping away at their brain because we thought that that would stop violent tendencies. And we learn that through medicine, a lot of our decisions don't always work. We're trying to fix things. Or do you believe that this was done on a global scale to try to eradicate or be able to control the human population? A lot of questions there. I'll let you kind of go from there. And I know that there's a lot of that that you're covering in the book, but that's kind of where my mindset is.
Well, Dave, you ask good questions, you know. Thank you. And the reason I wrote this book is I think these are things we need to talk about, and I think there are things we need to think about. And there are questions that need to be asked. Now, I mean, medicine has changed a lot over the years. There was a time when a doctor said, you know, we really need to wash our hands before we do surgery, you know, and they put him in a mental hospital for being crazy, okay? So medicine has changed a lot. Are they still making mistakes? Yes, they do. There's a word called iatrogenic deaths, means doctor-induced deaths in hospitals. Okay, there's about 120,000 a year. I mean, that's why the lawyers make so much money. It's why medical insurance is so high. I mean, there's a lot of problems. The deeper and darker question is the distribution of AIDS intentional to control the Earth's population? And, you know, history is awfully cruel. And 500 years from now, they may say AIDS is the disease that saved the planet. In the meantime, it looks like a bad disease. But, you know, there have been some real triumphs of medicine. The news about smallpox is back in the news this week with the vials being found at the FDA. Smallpox in the 20th century killed 500 million people. That's twice as many people as died in war in the most deadly century in history. So, and smallpox was wiped out by a vaccine. I applaud the smallpox vaccine. It's one of the great accomplishments of medicine. But that does not mean that all vaccines are safe.
Are you against vaccines? I know there's a lot of hubbub going on around that right now and claims that it causes autism and everything like that. Where do you stand on the idea of children being vaccinated? Do you think that it's just adding more danger, or do you believe that there are important things that we need to be protected of?
I think there's entirely too many vaccines, entirely too many. And I do think there's substance to the autism conversation, and because there's an explosion, an epidemic of autism. I mean, it's more than 10 times what it was 10 years ago. I mean, it's a really bad situation, and I don't think the mothers that are angry about this are crazy. I think there's substance to that. But the problem with all these things is vaccines are forced down our throats. They're very profitable. I mean, I remember when I was told as a parent, I'm a parent, I got kids, all right? I was told that my kids couldn't go to school unless they got the Hep B vaccine.
Right.
So I went across, I lived across the street from the school. I went over there and I knew the nurse. I said, would you tell me who told you that this was the law? And she said, oh, it's just the law. I said, no, I want to know who told you. Okay. And she said, well, I was told by so-and-so and I got their phone number. I called them and I said, who told you? And I did this over and over and over again until I worked my way up the ladder. And I finally was on the telephone with the chairman of the Board of Education for the state of New Mexico, where I lived at the time. And she said, this is an awfully interesting question, because I've been on the Board of Education for 20 years, and I've never missed a single meeting. And I can guarantee you that we, the Board of Education, have never once discussed this subject. So where is it coming from? It's coming in the back door from the CDC. And if you don't think there's a relationship between NIH, CDC, and the pharmas, you're not paying attention to how the government works. And that Billy Tozan, that politician from Louisiana, who wrote the legislation about the pharmas and giving them immunity from lawsuits over vaccines and stuff like that, when he left, Congress to take a $1 million a year job running pharma, the lobbying organization for the pharmaceuticals. I mean, when you start to look into this, it gets really blatant when you see it. So I think there's I go on a case by case basis with the vaccines. For example, the you know, if you get cut by a rusty nail, you're going to get it's 4 o'clock in the morning, so I'm forgetting the term right now. But that vaccine, tetanus. Okay, the tetanus vaccine is grown on chicken eggs. Okay, well, I'm not particularly concerned about what I'm going to get from a chicken egg. Okay, but I am concerned about the fact that I occasionally cut myself and stuff. So I took the tetanus vaccine to make sure I was up on it. But that does not mean I think children ought to be getting every vaccine that the pharma's come up with. And a lot of this stuff, you know, it's like the big print giveth and the little print taketh away. I mean, some of these vaccines, there's real questions about whether they even work or not.
I agree. I mean, there's definitely, you know, I think sometimes we think, and I know there's a lot of speculation now and conspiracy about Big Pharma and that they're really not out to help us. They're just out to sell drugs. And there's a lot to be said with that. I do think that there's a lot of great work being done by doctors. I personally believe that they've probably found some very solid cures for cancer that they're not releasing because it's a bigger industry to continually bandage over the injuries and the issues instead of going to the cure route and taking care of it all at once. That's a dark
atmosphere. They're making a fortune treating it. Yeah.
Right. That's a dark way to look at it, but it is what it is. And I do believe that that's going on because there are too many things that are coming to light, like cannabinoid oil and its amazing effect on cancer cells, how destructive it is to cancer. You know, I've been telling people for years that they should research cannabinoid oil and its effects on cancer. Why is this something that's not being made available? And slowly but surely, they're making it somewhat available in different parts of the United States and making it legal and looking at treating seizures and things like that. But then there's other aspects where we're keeping medical discoveries hidden, which I don't understand. You know, is it a way that maybe this is the way that eventually they're putting something into all of us that when they need to pull a trigger, they can pull a trigger and drop part of the population? I mean, that's kind of a dark philosophy, but when you look at the big picture of everything, Ed, does it ever come to you that maybe that is what they're doing, is incorporating us all with time bombs to make it easier for them to control us?
Well, if you look at history, I mean, and you don't have to look very far back in history, look back to the Nazis and World War II. If somebody said, oh, they're going to make factories for killing people, and they're going to wipe out the entire Jewish population of Germany, that sounds pretty far-fetched. That sounds really strange. You'd have to be really paranoid to believe they would do something like that, but they did it. And that's what you have to realize. You're dealing with the human brain here. I mean, they do stuff. And we, the people here, our only defense is to educate ourselves and to try to participate somehow in this democracy, which is frankly run by the media. And we don't own the media. The same people that own the pharmas own the media. I'm talking about the big networks like CBS and stuff. So, you know, the question is, you know, I mean, what can we do? We can listen to Coast to Coast. We can read books. You know, we can talk to each other about it. That's our first line of defense. And hopefully out of that, something good will happen.
Quick question from Charles, who emails in and says, it seems a lot of the information that you've been talking about tonight is largely based upon the 1960s and 70s writings of May Brussel, America's foremost assassination researcher, who wrote about all of this in great detail back in the 60s and 70s. Did you base a lot of the work that you've looked at on her research as well?
No, I didn't even look at Mae Brussels stuff. I know who she is, and she was really on board with the Kennedy assassination. If what I say agrees with her, it's only because two different people looked at the same thing and came away with the same conclusion. I did not base my stuff on her work.
All right, I know we've got a lot of people that are starting to line up. Our phone lines are going to be open in the next hour. We'll take your calls. We'll continue talking with our guest and find out more about the story. Hit me. We've got about 4 minutes, I think, left in this segment. If I've got that, well, maybe about a minute and 2-3 minutes left. What are some of the new points to the book that you do want to mention? Just give me a little rundown on there so we know that people can look for this in the new volume.
Well, we've covered a lot of them here, but just let me hit the list real quick with this glasses here. Okay, we've got the crime scene photos. That's new. We got the memo from J. Edgar Hoover ordering his agents not to investigate the Sherman murder. That's new. Statements from neighbors who lived in Mary's apartment about seeing Lee Oswald coming and going from the apartment complex and the flushing of the toilets, which is all new. Oswald's employment time cards initialed by Judith Vary Baker. That's in here, and it's in Me and Lee. One of the homicide detectives called me to discuss the Mary Sherman murder. He actually investigated it for NOPD, and he told me he wanted to arrest that Juan Valdez guy that Lee Oswald was seeing, and he didn't have enough evidence to do it. Claims from a doctor at Ochsner Clinic that Stanley Stumpf murdered her. We talked about that. My efforts to get a single name unredacted from the FBI, the NOPD burglar report that I talked about, and the CIA family jewels document, which is at least the summary of it, is in there. That's the new stuff, and that's all either in front of the old chapters or behind the old chapters. It's kind of split.
All right, and that's in the new version, Dr. Mary's Monkey. You've got new photographs, new information throughout the book that you can pick up. It is updated. How is it that new things are still coming to light 50 years later? You know, I mean, 30, 40, 50 years after these incidents, how are we still able to find this?
Well, a lot of stuff is coming to me, you know, I mean, rather than me finding it. I mean, witnesses coming to me, people handing me documents. You know, I've got new documents from the FBI, the CIA, the CDC, and the NOPD in there. And most of those were brought to me by other researchers or people like that. So some of it is just pulling things together. I mean, your producer said somebody's talking to her. I mean, sending me information about this thing just from listening to Coast to Coast. You know, radio has been a big part of my new information. And there's a lot of interest in this. I was just in New Orleans, and I gave a speech at a library. We had 500 people show up at the library for the speech, for a room that only held 300. I mean, that's the level of interest in New Orleans where all this stuff went down.
All right, let's take our final break. We're going to come back after the top of the hour here. We're going to open up phone lines. If you have questions for our guest, points you'd like to get fleshed out more, join us. You can be a part of the show. Coast to Coast AM continues right after this.